This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
When auto executives and union leaders came to Washington to ask for a $25 billion bailout, they expected a cold shoulder from President Bush, but got one from the Congress as well. Is the federal government really willing to take the risk of adding more than a million auto workers to the unemployment lines that snake throughout the Midwest?
And what would happen to the wages and working conditions of those auto workers that might keep their jobs with the big three companies or other auto workers across the region and nation? Now Washington to Detroit, drop dead. Joining us are Frank Hammer, former president of UAW Local 909, Warren, Michigan, and Warren Brown, auto columnist for the Washington Post.
The first question is, you know, a prelude to the question perhaps is that there has been tremendous ire and very easy snipes, as far as I'm concerned, from Congress about auto executives taking private jets to the bailout hearings in Washington. But the fact of the matter is nobody's moved to nationalize the companies by virtue of that, and certainly nobody has shown any real rancor or ire to overpaid fat cat executives in so many industries. So with that, that seems to be the easy part of thing. But what really is the problem with the big three auto industry in Detroit?
This is Warren. The real problem is that Washington really, truly does not understand Detroit. And clearly, Detroit does not understand that Washington takes Hollywood seriously. Had the Detroit, you know, executives understood at least that much, they would not have come, they would not have honored their corporate security protocols, which is basically there on the books that they fly in private jets when on travel. What they would have done, had they understood that, is come and a caravan of very nice, very attractive dual electric hybrid SUVs. They would have come in their electric hybrid Chevrolet Malibu and, you know, Saturn Aura, and they would have found some way, even though it's in prototype stage right now, to bring forth the plug-in electric Chevrolet Volt. But they did not understand that. You know, they labored under the misapprehension that Washington understood or appreciates the historical significance both to the defense and the creation of a viable middle class that the domestic auto industry represents. What they should have done was have someone scout the side streets of Capitol Hill, scout the garages and the parking lot of Capitol Hill, because had they done so, they would have found out that America's politicians and the staffers who served them, indeed, most of the new car buyers in America's capital city do not buy what America makes. Let me give you an astounding statistic that I just, you know, picked up today from R.L. Polk & Company. It's a marketing company. 76.9% of the new vehicle registrations in the Washington metropolitan area are for foreign nameplate or import vehicles. Now, that's astounding just for cars, but Washington likes to beat up Detroit for making too many trucks and for being truck dominant. Well, apparently that dominance does not have any effect in the Washington, D.C. market, or at least not the effect you think it would have, because get this, 53% of the new light truck registrations, that's for minivans, vans, port utility vehicles, and pickup trucks, 53% of the new light truck vehicles in the Washington metropolitan area are foreign import or import brand trucks. Now, that's amazing. So when you look at that, it's easy to understand why the mindset on Capitol Hill is that somehow Detroit is a bit of a cipher, a kind of a punching bag, somebody who could be played. But at least that's my, you know, that's my take on it.
Frank, when we talk about Detroit, some people talk about the Detroit executives and some people talk about the workers. Is it your view that the very fact that the workers are unionized played into this?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I certainly believe that. I think that GM and the big three are being treated like Saddam Hussein because they're unionized. I think that many of these free marketing types like Shelby and all these other guys are viewing the auto companies as infected with a virus called union, and they're willing to cut their nose to spite their face. They're willing to see the big three go down, if for only the reason to destroy the UAW and to make auto industry in the United States union-free.
Well, there still is. Let's go to this. Well, union, ha, huh? $71,000 a year. Why are they crying? Didn't the last contract actually help bleed the company? Isn't that the real issue? Because when Ken said they talk about workers, they do, but they talk about them like the dogs.
Well, you know, Mimi, yeah. I don't know of too many elected officials. I don't know of any elected official on Capitol Hill, and I doubt seriously that many of their senior staffers would be willing to settle for a UAW paycheck. I can assure you that many of the highly paid pundits in the media, George Will, Thomas Friedman, so forth and so on, including myself, would not be willing to settle for a UAW paycheck, let alone trade our relatively comfy jobs for a year of working on a UAW assembly line, which there's more than a little bit of class bias, you know, operating here. And Mr. Hammer is absolutely right. The bottom line is that when you look at the Democratic opposition against this bailout or the reluctance to give it, a lot of it comes from the Deep South and the Southwest. Well, Mr. Hammer knows what's happening there. What's happening there? Every foreign automobile manufacturer setting up shop in the United States did so in one of those so-called pro-business, essentially non-union or hard-to-organize states. Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, North Carolina, Tennessee, all of those places where it is difficult to set up unions, that is where, with the exception of Subaru in Normal, Illinois, and Honda in Marysville, Ohio, which is, even though it's in Ohio, it's not exactly what you call a union hotbed, but most of them headed straight down south to set up their plants. Now, that is not an accident. And I am certain, even though a lot of the opponents of the bailout aren't saying it, what they are hoping for is that if the American Three or one of them goes into bankruptcy, it would put such pressure on the UAW that the UAW would, quote, in a restructuring move, you know, agree to wages and benefits that are more in line with the wages and benefits being given to the non-union workers in the foreign plants.
Frank, what about
that's already
that?
Been done.
Yeah.
That's already been done. That was done last year.
Yeah, I know. You know that, Mr. Hammer, but I'm telling you, you have a lot of people who would still like to put additional pressure to remove the threat, you know, of the union.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment on that. I think what I found extraordinary in what's been going on is that practically every Democrat that has spoken on the subject have all chimed in with, we need new concessions from the UAW. And I find that, you know, who needs friends like that? Or who needs enemies if we got friends like that? They're not up to date on the sacrifices that the UAW made last year, sacrificing new worker wages to 50% of what they used to be, and they're slashed in half. Pensions are relegated to 401ks. And so on. And these are monumental changes for the UAW. They gave up the concept of equal pay for equal work. And the Democrats, who allegedly are our friends, are the ones that are chiming in. And I have to say, even Mr. Axelrod, who works for President-elect Obama, making it sound like the UAW hasn't done enough. And it makes it sound like the UAW is the problem.
Mr. Hammer, let me play devil's advocate here. To what extent is that the UAW's fault? For example, and you can get on me about this, I have written that the biggest problem facing the UAW and, as a result, the American Three, you know, car companies, the biggest problem is that the UAW, with the exception of being grandfathered in at the NUMMI plant in California, being grandfathered in at the Subaru plant in Normal, Illinois, and at the essentially Ford Mazda plant outside of Detroit, that with the exception of those three examples, the UAW has failed to organize Toyota, Honda, Nissan, BMW, and Mercedes-Benz. What can you do about that?
I have to concur with you that, in fact, one of the reasons that we are faced with this situation now is the fact that for all of its efforts, the UAW has been unable to organize in one of the companies you mentioned, partly because the companies in question very strategically did everything possible to prevent unionization in their plants, and they have succeeded so far. And the UAW, unfortunately, has egg on its face for its inability to appeal to those workers who have been chosen because they were anti-union. But nevertheless, the conditions in those factories are, from my understanding, for example, health and safety is quite atrocious at Toyota. And if workers are injured there, they're fired. So the UAW has been unable to organize, and that is one of the problems. And if we were not able to lift them to the standards that we had set at the Big Three, it's only a matter of time before the transplants bring down our ability to negotiate wages and bring us down to them. And the problem with that is that it's a vicious spiral. What do you think, with the newest rounds of concessions, what do you think that the Toyotas and Nissans are going to do? They're not going to sit still. They're going to underbid us. And
well,
it's a bidding war,
right?
To the bottom.
Let's look at Hyundai, the Korean plant in Montgomery, Alabama. Hyundai came into fairly, economic, depressed area in Alabama and said at the outset, look, we know that Honda, Toyota, and Nissan pay something on the level below, but something on the level of UAW salaries. Look, we cannot afford to pay you what Honda, Nissan, and Toyota are paying their workers because we are the low-cost leader. In order to remain a low-cost leader, initially, certainly, we have to pay you less. So that's already happening, isn't it?
Absolutely. I think in Mississippi, and Nissan opened up, I think, with wages of $12 or $14 an hour tops in a new plant there. And I think the difficulty is that the laws make it very, very difficult to organize. And there is a bill coming down the pike that we hope that Obama is going to support and that the Democrats are going to support in the Congress that may enable the UAW to organize a little bit simpler, a little bit easier to level the playing field. But in the meantime, the anti-union crowd is pointing to the efficiency of the non-union plants as if the efficiency has to do with the fact that they're non-union. And I think what's hidden is that they have no retiree health care cause to speak of because they are new factories and they have younger workforces. And that's being hidden from the public, so-called legacy cost.
Let's get back to the bailout right now because this is something that's going to be going forth either next week or the week after, we hope. And I want to get into the effects of what would happen if there was no bailout at all in terms of not only the structure of the UAW but also mass unemployment in the region. Who wants to take that?
Well, according to the Center for Automotive Research, you're looking at possible direct loss of 2.5 million jobs, related to automobile, assembly and transportation of, cars and trucks and what have you. You have the possibility of maybe 500,000 more ancillary jobs, related to that. What Washington doesn't understand is that the automobile industry is a really extremely interrelated enterprise. I mean, ever since, two decades ago when the industry started perfecting just-in-time manufacturing, and that is that one part of the assembly line finishes but one set of parts and another set of parts is coming into the door, relieving storage and what have you. It's an extremely interrelated industry. Suppliers, original equipment manufacturing suppliers in the automobile industry, for years now have been under tremendous stress to reduce their costs and improve, efficiency. As a result, many have been, for the longest time, operating on razor-thin profit margins. I mean, if they have a continued severe interruption of business, it's not like the airlines where, people can kind of keep flying. They shut down. That's what happens. It affects the community.
But one of the things that's being said, there are people who say, well, look, the workers are going to get messed over anyway. What's the big deal with bankruptcy? Why are we pushing $25 million and if a billion? And if we do, shouldn't there be kind of strictures on the companies? I mean, as a matter of fact, there are people who have even suggested that the plants be retooled to do industrial work that is not necessarily automobile-based, but does mass transportation, industrial construction, and so on. Frank?
Yeah, I'd like to touch on that. First of all, in terms of the bankruptcy, none other than Spencer Abraham, who was a U.S. senator from my state, from Michigan, was a Republican, came in with Bush, no lesser a Republican than him is saying that bankruptcy would be the final chapter for the Big Three. He said that it would just be basically a liquidation sale. And there was another article that came out today that said that, the Big Three's problems are tied up with the financial sector because there's a whole lot of outstanding loans, and if the Big Three go, so will a lot of the banks that are, tied in with auto, like what Warren was saying about, you know, how much we're integrally all tied up together. What I want to say is that the consequences for Detroit, Detroit's already in a stage of Katrina without floodwaters. And if there's the bankruptcies were allowed to take place, there would be a total collapse economically of this region, and I'm sure other Midwestern towns. I think that what you said about how do we go forward is on target, that there has to be a rethinking about transportation and about what these factories are used for. The gorilla in the room is global warming, and we need to totally rethink what we do for transportation, going to mass transportation as opposed to individual gas-guzzling cars and using some of these factories to go into 21st century transportation.
And do you think next week they're supposed to come back with a plan? Big Auto, will they begin to think through some of these issues?
Warren Brown talking here. I've been covering this industry since 1982. My problem, somebody says, well, you know, maybe you're just too close. Well, maybe I know too much that a lot of other people don't know. But the ignorance about what this industry has done and is doing is absolutely appalling. They said, well, they're going to have to retool to make more fuel-efficient vehicles. The domestic industry has been in that retooling phase now for more than a decade. Look at General Motors. It's not just marketing hype when GM says that it has more 30-mile-per-gallon vehicles than anybody else. They do. Their problem is that they have been goofily not really telling anybody about them, you know, until now. Detroit is awful at telling its own story. Look at the dual-mode hybrid, you know, electric vehicle. It is much more efficient and actually is more useful for larger vehicles than the current nickel-metal hydride system used in the Prius. But who knows that? Not very many people. My argument is that there was no deliberate malfeasance on the part of Detroit to produce more fuel-efficient vehicles. Detroit's problem was that it doesn't understand public relations worth a damn. The problem is that the Detroit executives, in my mind, rightly figured, look, gas electric hybrid vehicles are an expensive interim technology with a whole lot of other environmental problems that will come back and slap us in the future. Let's try to do the missile shot. Let's try to go hydrogen fuel cell, hydrogen-powered vehicles. What's the problem with that?
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there. To be continued at another time, because there's so much to say on this, but we do need to move on, and I want to thank both of you very, very much for being with us. Frank Hammer, former president of UAW Local 909, Warren, Michigan, and Warren Brown, auto columnist for The Washington Post. Thank you both.
Thank you. Take care.
Thank you.
And I'm here with my co-workers, Tracy and Kevin. We're here to let everybody know we work for GM, and we need to have the government hear us out, and we need these bridge loans. We are very proud of the work we do here. If we do not receive the loans and the help that we need, and the big three go under, it will devastate this country to no end. 1 in 10 Americans work somehow with the auto industry. And it's very important. It's just, this country, we will lose everything, everything. Our teachers, dentists, doctors, all of us will suffer greatly for this. We're as proud as we can be of what we do. We need your support and everybody to back us up.
And, oh my gosh, they were talking about the bailout plan, and Secretary of Treasury Paulson's talking about it, and how they're not going to bail out the auto industry. What? Okay. And now, when the economy is so bad and the unemployment rate is super high up, they think we need to get more money to the banks so they can waste it again. But the root of the problem of the job losses is because the auto industry are laying off tons and tons of people because they're doing so bad, they can't support that many people anymore because they're doing so poorly. So if you want to continue this downward slope, then yeah, don't bail out the auto industry. Ford and GM are going to fail. I was talking to my friend today. His dad works for Chrysler. Tons of people get laid off. So when my dad's friend loses his job, he's looking for a job right now because he knows it's going to happen because there's not going to bail him out. So he pretty much can't go to college, and most people won't be able to afford going to college because there's not enough money going around, and because we're giving it all to the banks, $750 billion that could be paid for in much better thing. Our money, you're taking it away from us to pay for. Why don't you let us have the money so we can spend it to stimulate the economy? Okay. Okay. So you're going to pay it to the people that already screwed us up. We could do it with our own money that we bank, that Barack Obama is a socialist, by spreading the wealth around. Basically, you're taking people's tax dollars and giving to the exact people that screwed up before. So they could be having those people spend it and get the same effect, the people that made the money spend it. Or you can give it to the banks who already screwed up before. What are you going to do? You're screwing over tons of people out there. They're not going to get an education. And it's going to be in the toilet. Bail out Detroit, please. They can't buy stuff they don't have any job to pay money with. And you're going to bail out AIG, an insurance company that I just don't understand. Why? Are you hating on Detroit because we're just that messed up? We're this number one crazy, crazy city? No. Don't you think we deserve a chance? Because that's not the banks. I don't even know. You know what? We need to bail out Detroit or else the problem will not be fixed. We will not have any... We'll have very, very little industry in the United States. We'll be completely screwed. So, we need to support a bailout for Detroit automakers. Now.
Turn up the line when it's all for them and the rest of us.
I don't know what I can say to you, that I know that this is going to affect our friends, our family, everyone that we know, that this loan is necessary. We have to have it. If we don't have it, everything is going to fall from here. And I don't want to see us end up in another depression, because I know that is where we're heading, and that is what everybody has talked about. All the critics, from everything I've read and everything I've seen, have said that we are heading to a depression, and I don't want to see that happen, because I know what will happen is if the auto industry caves. That is our heart of America.
That is where we stand. Our cars are our main source of income right now because they affect a lot of people. Nobody realizes that, and I hope I open some eyes and let people know that our auto industry is very important, not only to me, my friends, my family, my coworkers, to everyone that you know. It's going to affect them some way, shape, or form. I've already seen 150 stores of a retailer close because of our economy, and I don't want to see another store close. I want to see us, our economy bounce back, and this auto loan will help us every way that we can possibly think of.
Everywhere you look, them corporate hound dogs are barking, ripping off the people, tearing up the land. When it's all for them and the rest of us, we never get the blues. Hell, the corporate blues. Well, them hogs are in the barroom, feeding at the trough. For them greedy CEOs, we thought they never enough.
Big Time Corporate Blues was written and performed by Mike Stout.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.
Buildingbridgesradio.org.